Hi, I'm Adam, and welcome to the First Man Photography podcast. Firstly, I'd just like to start by saying a really big thank you to everyone that has been listening so far. The analytics from the podcast suggest it's doing really well, and that is down to you. So thank you very much. If you are enjoying it, I would really appreciate it if you would go ahead and give it a review. If you would give it a 5-star review, that would really help me out. If not, then go ahead and just do as you see fit. But that would really mean a lot to me just to get it up in the rankings on iTunes so more people can hear the content. I really would appreciate it. So thanks for listening. I have also just hit 30,000 subscribers on YouTube as well. If you are discovering me through the podcast, please do go over onto YouTube and check out First Man Photography. That's my channel. And see if there's something there that you would like. There's tips, tricks, tutorials, but mostly now it's all about my landscape photography vlogs, where I just sort of go out into the wilderness, into the countryside, and shoot my landscape photography and just document the process so you can sort of see how I go about capturing my work. Also, if you haven't done so yet, please do head over to firstmanphotography.com, head into the video section, and from there you can download a free ebook on how to capture perfect exposure every time. There are a lot of people enjoying the ebook, so go ahead and download that and see if there's something in there for you. First thing today, I just wanted to share a sort of bit of an insight into where this channel started. I started First Man Photography initially to help out new photographers because I started to get very frustrated at some people involved in photography, some photographers, some people that liked photography, and I sort of coined a phrase very early on, and I wrote a blog post about it. I have since filmed a video about it, and it's about a particular type of photographer, and I named that person conservative photographer. This is basically a person that will, they're very traditional, they'll go out of the way to be exclusive, to try and shut newcomers into photography down because they're jealous, because they're scared. It's those people you hear complaining about new wedding photographers coming into the industry and undercutting them. And I think it's purely because they're scared. They want to be exclusive and they don't want to give anyone else a chance, possibly, most likely, because they are not good enough. They sort of harp on about how they used to shoot film and that you haven't shot film in the past. You're somehow not a real photographer. And that is just absolute nonsense. The only reason you probably shot film is because you are old enough to have been around before digital came in. I am old enough, unfortunately. I'm getting on a little bit now into my late 30s with an extremely bad back most of the time. But I used to shoot film. It means absolutely nothing. I now shoot digital exclusively because it's just so much easier. It's much more fun and you don't have all the hassle that used to come with film. Film, digital, it's just the medium that I use to share my vision, share my work, and share my images. It doesn't really matter where it came from, in my opinion. If you love film and you still shoot film, absolutely fair enough, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. It's about the vision, it's about the artwork, it's about the process from visualization at the start right up to the print, and whether that's digital or film, to me, it doesn't matter. So anyway, conservative photographer is there to sort of make people feel bad about themselves, to shut people down and are not supportive of the industry of photography, of people getting into it and enjoying this beautiful art and this beautiful, what is for many people, an excellent pastime and hobby. So I was, part of that was what I was doing when I was starting the channel, is just to try and shove conservative photographer out of the way and make way for a new generation of photographers who were supportive. Doesn't matter what age you are, but who are supportive, who help each other out, give good feedback, whether that's constructive or positive. It doesn't really matter, but that's what I wanted to sort of promote with First Man Photography. First Man Photography, the name I just came up with because I'm Adam. I'm not excluding women or anything ridiculous like that. The channel is there for absolutely everybody. That is my absolute intent. That is my ethics behind the whole thing. And that's what I want to promote. So I started off by doing tutorials. I was getting into video, getting used to sitting in front of the camera because I didn't really have that much experience of being in front of camera. I'm quite used to standing up in front of people and talking and being the center of attention. But the second you sit down and you switch that camera on, or if you're out and about and you switch the camera on and the lens is pointing in your face, it's a very different feeling to standing up in front of a room full of people, because it's almost like the whole world is watching you. Even though the first time you put a video up, you may only get your family watching, but it's still, that's the kind of feeling you sort of get when you first switch that camera on. You've got to suddenly think of something to say. And for me, that's why I really started doing the tutorials, because it sort of gave me a chance to plan the video. I knew exactly what I was going to talk about, and I felt at the time that that would give some good value to people. And it did, and it's done really well. And still to this day, my water drop photography tutorial is my best video. It's done the best in terms of performance on YouTube, and it continues to do so. If you look back at that, I am slightly wooden during that presentation, but the information there is solid, so I'm still quite proud of that video. But after that, I sort of started to think about how could people who were my friends in photography, who were talented photographers, how could I make the channel appeal to them and not just to beginners? Because whilst I still want to appeal to beginners, I do want to have a slightly wider audience to that. So at that point, it was then I started moving into doing the vlogs. And initially, I wasn't even planning for them to be landscape photography vlogs. It was just going to be a sort of vlog of my day, of what I was doing around photography. And it sort of naturally progressed into the landscape photography, basically because that's what people seem to really love to see. Now, my inspiration around vlogging generally came from a guy who is one of the biggest vloggers on the internet, and that is Casey Neistat. But I initially sort of saw him, it inspired me to get out and share these interesting stories about your day, and that's how I had got into doing the vlogs. It was probably at least 4 or 5 months after I started doing the vlogs that I heard of Tom Heaton. Tom is obviously one of the biggest landscape photographers on YouTube. He's done very, very well. He's really worked hard, produced some really good videos, and rightly so, has some good success. But I hadn't heard of him when I initially started vlogging, so any allegations that I'm copying him or anything like that are totally unfounded. My inspiration, like I say, came from a guy called Casey Neistat. If you haven't seen him yet, go and check his videos out on YouTube. They are strangely compelling, because often they're just stories about him and his family, but they are compelling. They're well shot, good cinematography, that type of thing, all in that sort of one-man band type package. And I think that's really what appeals to people around the vlogs. And I've had people contact me saying really nice comments, like they like to spend time with me, I inspire them, and give them a distraction from life when things get difficult. And that's what I like about vlogs as well, is that you can sort of just get a nice little glimpse into other people's lives and share in that experience, especially when on the whole they are real life positive type stories, because the news that we see is so negative all of the time, and the vlogs that you see from people show a different side. The world is good. The world is happy on the whole. And seeing some of these stories through vlogs, through video, and through stories that other people are telling really gives people hope. And it gives me hope. And I hope I provide that for other people. And that's sort of why I transitioned into the landscape photography. Apart from the fact that I love doing landscape photography, it's my number one thing. And it gave me more enjoyment of actually creating the videos and give me a chance to tell a story a little bit and be a bit more creative around making those videos as my sort of video creation has progressed. So I just wanted to share that just to give you a bit of a better idea of where I'm coming from. Now, from there, there is a little bit of a rant. So recently, every time I go onto YouTube, there seems to be another new landscape photography vlogger popping into my feed. Now, personally, I think that is absolutely brilliant. If I had been a 17, 18-year-old photographer today with this vast wealth of knowledge on the internet and being able to see the process and the learning and the journey that people go on whilst shooting landscape photography, it would have made my life a lot easier and probably would have helped me progress much quicker, and it would have been much more satisfying knowing that other people are sharing my experiences. So we are starting to build a really, really nice community between myself, people like Tom, other landscape photographers like Andrew Marr, who I did the recent collaboration with. There is a really strong community building around that, and it's really, really positive to see. Now, the rant is because there seems to be people on the internet, I know it's quite classic, but the negativity aimed at some of these newer landscape photographers on YouTube is really difficult. And it's sometimes coming from other landscape photography vloggers kind of thinking we're competing, and we're genuinely not. I'm not naming any names. I'm not talking about Tom Heaton or anyone else that I've mentioned who's doing this. It seems to be some of the newer people getting into it who are criticizing some of the bigger landscape photographers on YouTube. And it's just unnecessary. Let's support each other. The way YouTube works is that if we all create videos around the same subject, the whole thing will grow bigger and everyone will progress a bit better. I don't know about you, but I'm quite happy to watch 5, 6, 7, 8 videos around the same subject on YouTube. If I'm looking how to fix a bike, for example, if I'm looking at how to fix my pedal cycle, I won't just watch one video or one channel. I'll watch 10 or as much information as there is possibly out there in order to fix my bike. And that's even more so when it's around entertainment in the genre that you're interested in. So some of the fashion YouTube channels that are out there, some girls may watch 20 channels and that's what they're putting their time into. So it's not a competition. So we need to be supporting each other, helping the whole community grow, and we will all benefit from that. Whether you're a creator and you're making the videos, you'll get more viewers, or if you're a viewer, you will have more channels to watch around landscape photography. So there's just no need to be criticizing each other, and people work hard to make these videos, really hard, and seeing the criticism that's unnecessary, it's thoughtless, there's often comments made without the whole video being watched as well, and I find it pretty irritating. It then goes into like an attack on people's actual photography process, which is such a personal thing. I'm going to read you a comment, a negative comment that someone made recently. So it says, "So refreshing to see someone who takes pictures no matter what the conditions. I'm getting so bored by the pretentious videos where a photographer carts a ton of equipment over miles of rough terrain, up mountains, etc., only to say that the sun is a couple of degrees off where they need it so no shot can be taken. Really annoys me. I wish they could get real and take great pictures like you do and drop the suffering for my art rubbish. Sorry, rant over, and many thanks for keeping it real. Or should I say simple?" Now, I don't understand this because he's obviously happy with the video that he's just watched, but he's criticizing others. I don't think he's criticizing me because I'll generally will get a shot or at least share some shots, but maybe he is, I don't know. But it's what I don't understand what that is about. What are you trying to say? Because who are you to say that we shouldn't, I'm not going to mention who this person is, by the way, who is to say you shouldn't go out, climb up a mountain, have a great day's hiking, and the well-being that I keep talking about, it brings you that, and only take one shot? Who says that's wrong? Because as I keep saying, I think if you've gone out on a landscape photography shoot, one shot makes it a successful day. And since I started vlogging, there's a lot more pressure on me to get good shots because I don't think the vlog works as well if you don't have shots. Before I got into vlogging, I used to go out all the time and come back with nothing because for me personally, I'm setting my standards really high and I don't want to come back with what I consider to be average images. So how a person goes about shooting their landscape photography whether they come back with one shot or whether they come back with 10, it really doesn't matter, and we should not be criticizing that. And that's the whole point of the vlogs, is that we can see how different people capture their work. So I might go out and come back with 3 or 4 shots. Someone else might go out and come back with 1 shot. Someone else might go out and come back with 10 shots. None of those is wrong. I don't understand why you would suggest that it is. And if you think it's pretentious and you don't like the channel, don't watch it. It's as simple as that. Unsubscribe from my channel if you don't like the way I do it. It's as simple as that. Personally, for me, when I go out, I will have some kind of plan, because that kind of works for me now I'm doing the vlogs, about how many shots I want to capture. Someone did kind of ask me recently how many shots I discard. I actually don't discard any, generally. If I've talked an image through at the time of shooting it, I will virtually show you all the time, because it's just the way I capture my work. I visualize, I think about the shot, and I capture. If I don't think the shot will work, then I won't shoot a frame on the camera and I'll move on. But it's a really personal thing. It's about how you go capturing your photography, and you should not be criticized for that. If you are, ignore it. People are just jealous and they're trolling, essentially. So I'll leave that aside, but I just needed to get that off my chest, and that is really what I want to use this podcast for. Things that wouldn't come across essentially quite as well on YouTube, I think the podcast is perfect for that. So I think with that out of the way, we'll move on to some Q&A. Please do keep the questions coming in. Keep them coming in on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube, and on the email, wherever you see fit to keep the questions coming. Please do so. I do like answering them, and it really adds, again, to the community that we have going, I think. So first one today, Jane asks, where were you in this video? So the reason I've picked this question is because a few times recently I've been out and not mentioned exactly where I am in the video. Now, I said earlier, didn't I, that I want to be, I don't want to be exclusive. I want to include things, give you the information that you need. So I will always try and share exactly the location of where I am. I'm not trying to keep anything secret. If I don't say it in the video, it's because I literally have no idea where I am. Recently on the one I think this question was asked about, I was in the Lake District. I was on top of a small mountain called Ranadale Knots. But at the time of shooting, at the time of talking, in the wind, on top of the mountain, I could not remember where I was. And I just went with it. I didn't bother looking it up on the phone or anything. And I just went with it without that. But I'm not trying to hide anything. I will always put it in the description later if I haven't mentioned it, so please do check the description for the location if I haven't put it into, or if I haven't said it in the actual video. Next question. Martin asks, what wildlife lens are you using? So I've done a couple of landscape photography / wildlife photography vlogs recently. I'm going out with my best mate, who is, his name is Lyle McAlmont. He is a very, very talented wildlife photographer. He's passionate about it, he's dedicated, and now and again I will go out with him and we will capture some wildlife photography. Personally, I'm not particularly skilled at getting into the right place. Once I have the animal in my sights, I'm not too bad at capturing the images, but actually getting in the right spot, that's not my skill. It is Lyle's skill, so every time I go out with him, hopefully there will be some more wildlife type vlogs. But my wildlife lens is the Canon 400mm f5.6L lens. Now, I've reviewed this before, but it is absolutely, by far, my favourite wildlife lens. You may ask why, because there are a whole host of them out there. Some people really love the 100-400, but for me, it's all about that 400 f5.6. The 100-400 is a good lens, especially the newer one. But personally, I've always just found that I'm constantly out at 400 mils anyway. So I think the 400 mil worked for me. You get that extra little bit of quality from it being a prime lens. And these days, the lens just keeps getting better and better, because with that f5.6, you might argue that it isn't fast enough or bright enough. But with the new cameras that are coming out these days with the ISO or low light performance, you can crank the ISO up, especially on my Canon 5D Mark IV. You can crank that up to sort of 3200 and there is still very, very little noise in the image. So you can still get your shutter speed nice and fast to capture that wildlife, even with sort of f5.6 or up to sort of f7.1 or f8, which is generally where I will shoot to try and increase the depth of field a little bit to make sure I get some nice sharp shots. That lens is also light, so I can carry it around in my camera bag all day quite happily. It is excellent, excellent value if you're in the market for a new wildlife lens, particularly secondhand. And also, it's got really fast autofocus, and that is actually the key to wildlife photography, because that's where some people will struggle with some of the sort of kit type lenses, the 70 to 300s. The autofocus just isn't quick enough to properly track the animals as they move, and when you're using AI servo mode and things like that. So the autofocus speed is absolutely key for a wildlife lens, and that 400 is brilliant. I've used the Canon 300mm before, and that just didn't have the autofocus speed. That, I think that's the F4 I'm talking about. That just didn't have the autofocus speed that I was looking for, so I sort of reverted back to that 400, and I could not be happier with it. And as time goes on, I just get happier and happier with it. So really pleased with that lens. And obviously you've seen some of the shots that I get from that, and hopefully you will agree they are decent. And I don't think a better lens or a more expensive lens would help me in any way. I've used the Canon 500mm Mark II quite a few times. That's like almost like a 10 grand lens. It's really heavy, so you wouldn't take it out as much. And it does get nice images, but are they significantly better than what I'm getting with the 400mm? I don't think so. So I'm ecstatically happy with that lens, and I would urge you to try it out before you consider buying one of these bazookas for thousands and thousands of pounds. You can also, because it's light, you can hand hold it. That's how I prefer to shoot my wildlife. So I can't sing the praises of that lens enough. So next question, Dylan asks, when you started photography, what struggles did you face when trying to sell your photos, and how did you go about copyright on your images? When I started trying to sell my work, to sort of go into the professional arena, in order to sell your work, you need to get the attention of people. It's as simple as that. There are a number of ways to do that. Firstly, and what a lot of people have some success with, is to shoot your local area. So you know the area, you know the good spots, you know what people love, you know the iconic things around your area. Go out, shoot them, and then sell them to people in your local area. You can set up a Facebook page and use some targeting through Facebook to find people in the area, or you can do it on Instagram and search the hashtags around those places as well and do it that way. And if your work is good enough, then people will buy it on the whole. But you've got to get people's attention. So on top of that, you can build a good Instagram account. You can start a landscape photography vlog, that type of thing. But you need to get people's attention to sell your work. You can do it. You can go to sort of markets and print your work out and sell them there as people see the image. But you've got people's attention there, haven't you, as they come up to a stall that you're stood at. So lots of different ways. It takes hard work, it takes dedication, and it takes a little bit of business acumen on top of being an artist. So in order to be a successful photographer, you've got to have that sort of mix between being an artist and then having a business mind to it as well. Because when it comes to wedding photography, you're essentially selling your photos before you've even fired a frame, because you take a deposit, you take a promise that you'll be there to shoot the wedding, and you're essentially selling those images before you've shot the wedding. So once you've shot the wedding, you can then sell the images to family and friends, things like that. So that's really how I go about it. And I've sort of been trying to build this audience, entertain people on YouTube, on the podcast, on Instagram, to get that attention so I can then sell my work to them. And that's how I've gone about it. You've got to find what's right for you, but there's lots of different options. They're just all hard work that shouldn't be ignored. Copyright wise, I am maybe in the minority here, and I'm not suggesting you do it like this at all. It's totally a personal thing, but I do not worry about the copyright of my images at all. You will notice that I've never put a watermark on my images. I've had people tell me that they've gone over to my website and they've pulled an image off and they could print it, but go ahead, print it. I don't really care. If you want to steal my work, go ahead. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, because I hope you don't, by the way. I don't put images up that are huge, huge resolution. I want to put them good enough. I want the resolution to be good enough so you can appreciate the image on the screen, but just copyright's just not something I worry about. Because you could spend so much time being very bitter and negative about people potentially stealing your work that you'll just not be doing anything else. I'd prefer to stay positive, just ignore the fact that once in a while someone might steal an image from me, but I'm just going to go out and continue creating the work. And that's, I really want to be going down that positive line for me. And I'm not going to worry about people stealing my images. If you get to the point where you have that level of attention and people actually want to steal your images, then you probably found some success already. And you might sort of develop your own ideas about how you need to deal with this. What's right for one photographer may be different for another, but I don't want to worry too much about it. Hopefully enough people will know my work and will know which my images are. So if they ever see it being used somewhere else, they will tell me, or they will know that that is my work. So it's just not something I worry about. I don't want to waste time worrying about it. I want to focus on other things and creating more images. So that's my thoughts on copywriting. Question number 4, I think we're on to now. So we're back to the landscape photography vlogs. I'm wondering, how much time does it take to process and edit a landscape photography vlog like this? And that's an interesting question, because it is a lot of work. I'm not going to lie, it is a lot of work. So it takes me probably usually about 2 hours to process the pictures that I've taken that day and then to go through the time lapses. Because I like to get 2 or 3 time lapses per video, and there are about 250 shots per time lapse. So it takes a while to edit and burn them. I'm not editing all 250. You just edit the first one, have a look at the last one, and then just synchronize the whole lot from that set. And it does it really well in Lightroom. But to actually burn them into the JPEGs, which I then use to create the time lapse, takes some time. And I want to get my actual edits right for the images I'm going to use as well. So about 2 hours for that. And then to actually edit the video together, it takes me probably about 8 hours, maybe a little bit more sometimes. I'm working late into the night to get them done. Quite recently on the video where I went to the Farne Islands and then up to Scotland, I had a very busy schedule because I was right up to the wire of getting the video out on the Sunday by the time I got that video edited. So it was literally went up minutes before my 6 o'clock deadline for the Sunday. So sometimes I'm up against it, but it does take me about 8 hours. One thing I was thinking when I was asked this question as well was that if you are becoming or thinking of doing a landscape photography vlog or any kind of video production, I would really, really encourage you to start using the sort of more professional video editing programs straight away. I use Adobe Premiere, which I would highly recommend you use. That is my favorite. There are other options, but Adobe Premiere does it all. It's a pro level piece of software. If you head over to my website on my gear page, there is a link to get a free trial of that. So head over, get your free trial of Adobe Lightroom, Photoshop, and once you're on the Adobe website, you can also get a free trial of that, especially if you go for the whole Adobe CC Creative Package. The reason I say that is because if you learn it early doors, when you're just getting into creating videos, you will have the time to practice with it, to create the videos that way and make your mistakes when your audience is not as big. Because when you start on YouTube, you're not going to have a big audience to start with. It will build, but you won't launch into having a massive channel unless you're exceptionally good. And those people are few and far between. But when you first put it up, it's like I said, it's going to be your family, your friends watching, that type of thing. So use that time to learn how to use Adobe Premiere or something professional like that. Because as you progress, the channel starts building, the pressure starts building, the expectation level starts building, and the amount of time you have available to do things reduces because you're doing a lot more. So at that point, it's much more difficult to start learning a program at that point to the level that you've been dealing with one of the more amateur type programs. So learn it up front, get it down from day one, and then start building up your skills with something like Adobe Premiere as you go. So as you're getting better at actually shooting the videos, you're getting better at editing them. And by the time you've got a really decent following or viewership, then you will be up and running with the pro software, which will then give you the potential to just keep getting better. That's what I did. It's worked really well for me, and I would heartily recommend you doing that. Again, it's hard work. It will take a little bit of dedication, but if you want to succeed, hard work is what's required. So that would be my little bit of advice around video editing software, and that's how long it takes me to create them. I'm getting quicker. Initially, it took me maybe 12 hours, maybe more sometimes, but I've got it down to about 8 hours at the moment, reasonably steady pace. So I may talk a little bit more about my video editing at some point in the future. But for now, I think, how long have we run there? I think that will be a good time to wrap up this podcast. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Like I said, please do subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done already. I would really appreciate a 5-star review. That would really help me out, especially if you like this content. If you want to give it a 1-star, do so, but please, a 5-star would really help me out. Make sure you check out the YouTube channel at First Man Photography. I'm also very soon, and I'm excited to reveal that I'm going to be launching my landscape photography workshops. Now, the way these are going to work is I'm going to have probably 3 people per workshop, and we're going to relive one of the vlogs that I've done. I'll be picking some of the best vlogs, some of the best days that I had. We'll be reliving that. You'll get some tutorship from me. You'll have a chance to interact with other photographers and with myself out and about in the wilderness shooting landscape photography. And I think they will be really, really great days for people. I've had a lot of requests for people to come out shooting with me. And I think the best way for me to do that is starting to run workshops. I'm just putting that together at the moment. I will be launching it on the channel and on the website very, very soon. You'll be able to go onto the website, have a look at all the different workshops that I'm running, and then book it there and then on the website. So I'm very excited to launch that. So please do look out for that as soon as I put them out there. Anyway, I'm going to end the podcast there. I really do hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch to let me know that you've enjoyed it, I would also appreciate that. It means a lot. I love hearing from you. Keep the questions coming in, and I will see you on another video or hear or speak to you on another podcast very, very soon. I'm Adam. This is First Man Photography Podcast. Out.